Well, good morning, church. I hope you had a happy Thanksgiving and glad to join you again on this Sunday. And if you know the end of Thanksgiving, it signifies the beginning of a new holiday season, which is Christmas. And if you're like me, my family, we actually put up all the Christmas decor now. Our Christmas lights are about to get put up. We put up our Christmas tree. We're starting to listen to Christmas music. But just know, if you're starting to celebrate Christmas right now, if you're putting up all the Christmas decorations right now, you're kind of late to the party. And the reason why is because people, they've actually been putting up their Christmas decorations a lot earlier this year than ever before. I've heard some stories where people put up their Christmas lights and their Christmas tree as early as October, once Halloween ended. And the reason why people are doing this is because it's 2020. There's a USA Today article that explains how, because the pandemic has made everything a lot worse, people, they wanted to actually bring the holidays in a little bit earlier, because the holidays, it tends to bring a sense of normalcy, and it helps us to kind of take a break from reality that we are living in. And so that's why, because of this situation, people today, they are feeling like they need Christmas more than ever, and they want to celebrate it as long as possible. Now, what's interesting is that Christians, we've always actually celebrated Christmas a little bit early. It was never a one-day celebration for Christians, nor was it a one-week celebration, but historically speaking, Christmas is always a holiday that Christians celebrated for 4 weeks. And we call these 4 weeks traditionally known as Advent. The word Advent, it's the Latin word for coming or arrival, and it is meant to prepare us to get ready for the coming of Christ that we celebrate on Christmas Day. And the reason, though, why we celebrated Christmas early as a church, always historically, it wasn't to take a break from reality, but rather it was to remind us of a greater reality, that we are not left alone in this world to figure things out, but a Messiah once came, and he promises to come again. And so it's good for not only people to celebrate Christmas early, but I would argue it's really good for the church to celebrate Christmas early, especially this year, because for us also, it's 2020. And we need to remember, in a year like this, God has not left us alone, but once he came before, and he will come again. And what we want to do as a church today is we want to answer the question, well, how do we live in light of this? What does it look like for a church and as Christians to live in light of the idea and the fact that a Messiah came before and he will one day come again? And what I hope to do is, starting today, we're going to take the next 4 weeks to look at four different stories about Christmas and about what this day means for us. And so today, what we're going to do is we're going to look at the first story. And the first story of Christmas comes from the Gospel of Matthew. And it comes from Gospel of Matthew chapter 1, verses 18 to 25. And so if you have your Bibles, you can turn there, or it'll show up on your screen as well. Starting in verse 18, Matthew writes, "Now the birth of Jesus Christ took place in this way. When his mother Mary had been betrothed to Joseph, before they came together, she was found to be with child from the Holy Spirit. And her husband Joseph, being a just man and unwilling to put her to shame, resolved to divorce her quietly. But as he considered these things, behold, an angel of the Lord appeared to him in a dream, saying, 'Joseph, son of David, do not fear to take Mary as your wife, for that which is conceived in her is from the Holy Spirit. She will bear a son, and you shall call his name Jesus, for he will save his people from their sins.' All this took place to fulfill what the Lord had spoken by the prophet: 'Behold, the virgin shall conceive and bear a son, and they shall call his name Emmanuel,' which means 'God with us.' When Joseph woke from his sleep, he did as the angel of the Lord commanded him. He took his wife, but knew her not until she had given birth to a son, and he called his name Jesus." This is the reading of God's word. So the Gospel of Matthew, as many of you might know, this is one of four different Gospels that describe the life of Jesus, how he lived, what he taught, how he died. But what makes Matthew's account actually a little bit unique compared to the other Gospels is that Matthew is specifically known as a discipleship manual, meaning that Matthew's gospel, it doesn't just explain Jesus' life, but it's meant to teach us what it looks like to have Jesus in your life. That's why, if you notice, in the Gospel of Matthew, it has way more teachings than all the other gospels. It has a lot more red-letter Bible writing in that gospel more than the other ones, because Matthew wants to teach us that what does it look like for us to actually follow Jesus in our life. And so with that being said, in this story in chapter 1, verse 18 to 25, what Matthew's trying to do when he explains Jesus' birth is he's not just trying to tell us a story of how Jesus was born, but rather what Matthew's trying to do is he wants to teach us something. Through the birth of Jesus, what does it look like for Jesus to enter into your life? And that's why Matthew, when he shares Jesus' birth story, he shares it from the perspective of Joseph. Because Joseph was literally going to have Jesus enter into his life at this moment. And so today, what I want to do is I want to look at this first story of Christmas, and I want us to see that Christmas, through the story of Joseph, it tells us what does it look like for Jesus to enter into your life. What should it look like for you to have Jesus in your life at a time like this? And we're going to learn from the story of Joseph, there's three things. First, we're going to learn that with Jesus in our life, we have the courage to trust God's plan. Secondly, with Jesus in our life, we're going to have the willingness to let go of our rights. And then lastly, we'll have the grace to receive God's love. So the courage to trust God's plan, the willingness to let go of our rights, and the grace to receive God's love. Let's look at the first one together. The courage to trust God's plan. When Matthew describes Jesus' birth, he begins by describing and starting with the moment that Joseph discovers Mary is pregnant. Look what it says in verse 18 again. Now the birth of Jesus took place in this way. When his mother Mary had been betrothed to Joseph, before they came together, she was found to be with child from the Holy Spirit. Now there's a lot to unpack in this verse, the virgin birth, the Holy Spirit's involvement. But again, we're going to focus on Joseph because this is told from Joseph's perspective. And there's actually a lot to even unpack with Joseph. Notice that Joseph, when he discovers Mary is pregnant, Joseph was betrothed to Mary, meaning that Joseph, he was actually engaged to Mary to get married. And the way engagements worked back then, the first century, is a lot different than the way engagements work today. You see, today when you get engaged, it's a very individual endeavor. Oftentimes a guy will meet a girl, they'll like each other, they'll date for a while, and then if they feel like they're serious, the guy will propose, and then they will go off and get married. And so it's an individual thing, and it's also something that's important, but also non-binding. I mean, at a certain point, if the couple realizes they're not meant to be, you could always break off the engagement, and the worst that happens is their social media status changes, right? That's how engagements tend to work today. Not so in the first century. Engagements were a lot different. For starters, engagements back then, it wasn't an individual thing, it was very communal. Back then, the way you would get engaged with somebody is the parents of the son would find another family, and they would arrange a marriage between these, not just two individuals, but between two families. So everybody knew about it. They would not really know each other too well. The couple would not really have met before. This was the first time they'd meet when they set up the engagement. And what would actually happen is there would be a betrothal contract. There's a contract that's set up between the two couples. And so it's not only something that's communal, but engagements back then, it was very binding. The only way you could end an engagement is if someone dies or if you file for divorce. Now, Joseph, at this time, when he was engaged and betrothed to Mary, he was most likely an 18-year-old man, getting ready to become an adult. His family most likely knew Mary's family and set them up to be arranged to get married. And Joseph, most likely at this moment, he was getting ready to start a new life, to leave his father and mother and to hold on to his new wife and to become a new family. In other words, his whole future life was going to get set up at this moment. Now imagine, though, what happened. As he was getting ready for this new life, Joseph discovers that Mary, she's pregnant, and she's been pregnant, we know from the Gospel of Luke, for the past 4 months. And one thing is very clear, this is not Joseph's baby. More than betrayal that Joseph is feeling, because Joseph probably didn't know Mary too well at this moment, I think what Joseph is probably going through is a complete life change. Everything was about to shift for him, all his plans. He was going to go from a married person to a divorced person now. He was going to go from a status of honor to a status of shame. He was going to go from a new life with a new family to all of a sudden returning to an old life and his old family. And that's why in verse 19, this is what it says. And her husband, Joseph, being a just man and unwilling to put her to shame, resolved to divorce her quietly. Can you relate to Joseph in this way? Can you relate to Joseph in this situation? Maybe not all of us are engaged or have gone through a situation specifically like this, but can you relate to things not working out for you? Can you relate to your life plans changing? maybe a year ago only some of us could, but I bet most of us right now, we can definitely empathize with Joseph a bit more. And that's because when the pandemic that we're going through right now, when it first began all the way back in March, I don't know about you, but I think for a lot of us, our plans got delayed. Whether it be our wedding plans, you know, people were planning to get married and they just said, hey, you know, we're going to push the wedding back. The plans got delayed. Or job opportunities, the market's kind of tough now. Maybe I have to just delay what I want to do. Or for some of us, our traveling plans, we just kind of delayed them because we don't know how long this COVID situation is going to last. But now, it's already December. And the pandemic, it's still going on. And there's not really a clear ending in sight. And so I don't know about you, but for a lot of people that I know, and including for myself, our plans have no longer been delayed. Our plans are now changing. Weddings that used to be planned for about size 200-300, they've now changed to about the size of 50 or 30. The job opportunities that people were pushing back and delaying, now people are scrambling and realizing I need to just find something. Traveling plans, the things that we've kind of delayed, now those are also changing as well. My wife and I, we've been planning for the past 10 years, always a 10-year anniversary trip to Hawaii because that's where we went for our honeymoon. And next year, we actually have a trip planned to go to Hawaii because it's our 10-year anniversary. And we thought, hey, you know, right now it's tough, but next year it should be good. But now looking at things, we don't know. The plans are no longer just delayed. The plans are changing. And this could not only be discouraging because of all the things that have changed, but also if we're honest with ourselves, this is actually a pretty anxious time. Because again, we don't know what 2021 is going to look like. We don't know how much better things are going to be or how soon. But you know what Christmas reminds us of? What the season is supposed to remind us of through the story of Joseph is that even though times are challenging and the future is unknown and the things that you kind of planned have radically shifted and radically changed, what Christmas tells us through the story of Joseph is to have courage to face this upcoming year. In spite of the uncertainties and in spite of the change, would you have courage in your life to face this year? And that's what happened, what we see with Joseph. Joseph's life radically changed, and he was planning to have an escape and divorce Mary quietly. But notice what happens in verse 20-22. That totally shifts his demeanor, where an angel of the Lord comes to Joseph in a dream, and look what it says in verse 20-22. But as he, Joseph, considered these things, behold, an angel of the Lord appeared to him in a dream, saying, Joseph, son of David, do not fear to take Mary as your wife, for that which is conceived in her is from the Holy Spirit. She will bear a son, and you shall call his name Jesus, for he will save his people from their sins. And all this took place to fulfill what the Lord had spoken by a prophet. Notice there are a couple things that the angel tells Joseph that kind of shifts the way Joseph approaches the situation that he's in. First of all, notice in this verse that the angel tells Joseph that right now, you know what's driving you right now? You know what's causing you to make that decision to leave Mary? It's not you just being rational. It's not just you being logical. It's actually you being afraid. You're driven by fear. Look again, he says that to Joseph, Joseph, son of David, do not fear. There's fear that's driving you right now. And notice the angel doesn't just diagnose Joseph with fear, but the angel tells Joseph that you realize everything that's happening in your life right now, it is fulfilling God's plan. That's why he says that, he makes the quote where he says, all this is taking place to fulfill the prophecy that God laid out. And so notice also that the angel doesn't tell Joseph everything's happening to fulfill God's plans, but it's also happening to fulfill God's purpose. God has an intended purpose for everything that's happening, which is he will save his people from their sins. In other words, everything God is doing, this doesn't really have much to do with Joseph himself or Joseph's plans or Joseph's purpose, but all this is happening according to God's plans and according to God's purpose. What does this mean for you and me? Well, what's true for Joseph's situation back then is also true for our situation right now, and we could take courage in this. Realize, first of all, that many of us right now, with the upcoming year coming ahead of uncertainty, that we are probably, a lot of us, being driven by fear at this very moment. And this season of whenever there's fear, a deep grip fear and filled with anxiety that's in our life, oftentimes when that happens, it is revealing a misplaced trust that we have in something. You know, a few weeks ago, I actually lost my laptop in a freak accident. Some of you heard of this, where literally water from the roof fell on my laptop on the one spot in our home, and my laptop was gone. And I was sad about that, not because I lost the laptop itself, but I was sad because of all the work that was in that laptop. I was doing months of work just kind of prepping and preparing our church for this upcoming season. And when all of it got lost, I didn't just feel saddened by that, I felt anxious. I thought, what's gonna happen now with our future? What's gonna happen now with our church? Because all the plans that I was laying out, it was there, lost forever in the files. But as that was happening, I realized two things. One is I need to start investing in Google Cloud more. I need to start backing up my files a bit more meticulously. But also I realized that this probably revealed what I was placing my trust in a lot for this upcoming year, which were my plans. I was placing a lot of my hopes and kind of goals for our church in these plans I had. And while it's always good to plan, it's always good to have something that you make sure you're on schedule and so forth, I think it was actually the anxiety I was feeling. It was revealing that I trusted in my plans probably a lot more than in God's promises when it comes to our church. And so perhaps God was revealing to me through this moment, where is my trust? Is my trust misplaced? Is it somewhere else? And in a similar way, if you find yourself feeling anxious this upcoming year, perhaps God is revealing to you where your trust has been misplaced. And he's calling you to and reminding you to find that security in him and him alone that only he could provide. Realize also, based on the story of Joseph, that everything happening in our life, it is taking place not to further our plans, but to further God's plans. I have no idea how my kids are going to turn out during this pandemic season. Right now, they're all at home, and I sometimes wonder, are they going to be socially okay? Are they going to develop all right? But you know the one thing that gives me a lot of rest in thinking about my kids during the season? I rest knowing that they are exactly where they need to be according to God's plan. That's a very restful thing to think about. I have no idea where our church is, how our church is going to turn out. Again, this is a weird timing for our church where everything we're trying to start up, but then we started meeting online, and that can be very stressful. But the one thing that I rest in is knowing that God, he, before the foundation of all the earth, before the creation of time, God, he sees and knows that this is exactly where we would be during a pandemic like this, and we are exactly where we need to be as a church during a moment like this. And whatever situation you find yourself in, just know that if God has planned and is doing all things to fulfill his purposes, then you also, you are exactly where you need to be according to not your plans, but according to God's plans. And may that give you courage as well. And lastly, realize that according to the story of Joseph, everything is happening not just according to God's plan, but it's also to fulfill not our purposes, but God's purposes. I think some of us will feel a lot better if this hard season that we've been going through for a long time, it might be worth it if we knew at the end of it, our life would turn out better. If you're, for example, unemployed and it's difficult to find a job right now, wouldn't you feel a lot better if you knew, though, by 2021, you're going to have not just a good job, but a far better job that you could have had before the pandemic? Wouldn't that make you feel better? And yet, at the same time, that's not always promised. We don't know if we are going to be in a better situation. But there is something that you can promise. Something good is going to happen through this situation. I like this article. It's called God Has a Plan Through Your Life. And it's written by Trevin Wax. And his whole argument in this article is God's plan, it's not just for you, but God's plan is actually something that's going to happen through you. And this is what Trevin Wax says, quote, when the New Testament talks about God's plan, it is not always in reference to circumstances that happen to us. It also refers to blessings that happen through us. We might say then that God doesn't just have a plan for your life, but also a plan through your life. God will bless others through you. God has a plan through your life. And that's something that we can guarantee and have a rest in God's promise. As God is doing something, he has a purpose. It may not be about you, but rest assured he's going to do something through you. And will that give you courage during a season like this? And so, church, if I can encourage us, would Christmas encourage you to approach this upcoming year with a little bit more courage? For some of us, that courage begins by reassigning our trust no longer in the things that we've been trusting on, like at our plans or our jobs or our finances, but remembering that only in the Lord are we to place our trust in. Only He is the one who's able to lay out and make promises that we desperately need. And for some of us, we need courage to remind us that God, because He has planned all things, you are exactly where you need to be right now, according to God's plans. And for some of us, that courage begins realizing that God, He's doing something. He's going to be doing something, maybe not to you, but He's going to be doing something through you. And so through Christmas and the story of Joseph, may we remember that when Jesus is in your life, there is courage to take on and trust God's plan. Secondly, the story of Joseph, what we're told is that when Jesus is in your life, there must be a willingness to let go of our rights. I remember when my wife was pregnant with our son 5 years ago, we thought of a name for our son. What should we name him? And what's interesting is the name we thought of was the name Judah. And the reason why we didn't want to name him Judah was because I thought it's a kind of a unique name that was really nice. And I love the story of Judah in Genesis chapter 38. Well, when we told my parents our plans of naming our son Judah, they did not like the name at all. They thought it sounded way too similar to the name Judas, and they thought that he was going to get teased all the time at school. So they told us, you should name him Joseph. And so we said Joseph, and we started squabbling back and forth going, well, Joseph, you know, to me, it sounds a little, no offense to all the Josephs out there, it sounds a little bit plain, and I'm not really sure if I want to use that name. And my parents said, well, just know, no matter what, we're going to call your son Joseph, no matter what you name him. And so we had a long squabble about that, and at the end of the day, what ended up happening on the birth certificate, my son's name, Judah. And the reason why is because he's my son. That's my right. That's something that as a parent I get to do, is to name my son and give him his name. First century, all the more was that important. All the more was that somebody's rights. Parents had even a stronger rights to their kids' names, because usually the parents, what they would do is they would name their kid after themselves to kind of spread their lineage, or they would name their kids after the dreams they have for their child. So if Joseph were to stay with Mary and to take her as his wife, and if he were to adopt Jesus as his son, then he should naturally name the child Joseph after himself. Or he should name his son a Hebrew word or a Greek word for surgeon or for doctor or for whatever he wanted this boy to be. But notice the angel tells Joseph to not just stay with Mary and to not just take this child, but the angel tells Joseph to name this child a specific name, to name him Jesus. And it says in verse 21, she will bear a son, and you shall call his name Jesus, for he will save his people from their sins. Why is the angel saying this? Why is the angel telling Joseph to do this? The reason why is because when Joseph named his child Jesus, what Joseph is going to be doing is he's going to be recognizing that even though I accept this child as mine, he ultimately belongs to God. No matter, even though this is my right to name this child what I want to name him, it actually, that right is no longer yours. If you have Jesus enter into your life, then you actually lay down your rights for him. And the implication we learn from the story of Joseph is that when Jesus enters into your life, what Christmas reminds us is that nothing is off limits for what Jesus has his hands on. The notion that you feel like that you have a right to something, it actually and belongs to you, that needs to kind of slowly go away. That's why later in the Gospel of Matthew, in chapter 16, verse 25, Jesus tells us that if anyone would come after me, let him deny himself and take up his cross and follow me. But you know what's interesting is even though a lot of us in the church, we know this to be true, that all my life is meant to belong to Jesus. If I want a relationship with him, he has access to everything. I feel like this actually goes against the function of how most of us practice life. Why so? There's an author, his name is Daryl Miller, and he describes that, you know, people have different worldviews that kind of shapes the way we connect God to all of life. And he kind of gives different worldviews that are out there, and one of them is what he calls the theistic worldview, which is kind of more of an ancient worldview that says God is so separated from the world, there's a God and there's creation, but he's so separated that they have no connection to one another. So even though God's out there, I just kind of enjoy creation and do what I want to do in creation. There's a secular worldview that says God in the spiritual world doesn't even exist. There's only creation, so I only focus on creation that's there. Then there's a third worldview that's what I call the Christianese worldview. And the Christianese worldview says that God, he is Lord over the spiritual realm, over my worship, my devotional, my missions, But he's actually irrelevant to the secular realm. Work, dating, politics, that's what I, when I focus on my own thing. And then there's a biblical worldview, where God, he's separate from creation, but he's also involved in the world, so that the spiritual and the secular intersect together. Now, in the midst of all this, I truly believe that in our time, and particularly in our church, most of us, we believe in the biblical worldview, but we function as if the Christianese worldview is our worldview. We tend to think that even though God is real and he cares about creation, he cares about us, he's only caring about the spiritual things in our life, while all the secular stuff, we kind of have to take care of ourselves. And here's the problem. If we live according to a spiritual-secular divide, what's going to happen is God, he's only going to be present in your life in the spiritual parts of your life, but he's going to be very absent in your life in the secular parts of your life. That part, the secular part, that's where you can say, that's mine. That's what I need to do. Those are my rights. I remember this reminds me of the discussion I had with my community group where we were talking, and some, and I think we were reading a book, and a conversation got brought up where someone said, hey, what would you ask your pastor or elder advice for? And, you know, the usual things that I think a lot of us, if we were to think, what would I actually ask advice from a pastor or an elder from in the church, is maybe, how do I study the Bible? Or who is this character in the Bible? What's this theological question? Or if you're struggling with maybe a sin issue and you need help, or maybe if you want to know God more deeply, if you're doubting God, maybe we ask our pastor for advice, ask him for help. However, would you ever ask advice from your pastor or a Christian brother or sister that you actually respect spiritually? Would you ever ask him for advice if you're planning to move to the East Coast? Or if you're planning to purchase a home, is that something worthwhile asking advice from a pastor or a spiritual leader? More likely, we'd actually seek the advice of someone who lived in the East Coast and want to know what it's like there. Or more likely, we ask advice from someone who understands real estate and ask for advice there. And the reason why we do this is because these are secular topics. These are things that we need to decide what to do. And God, he's not really relevant to say anything in this space. But the story of Christmas, what it reminds us of is that when Jesus enters into your life, realize that Jesus, he has rights over everything in your life. I'm not saying that you should therefore ask pastors or leaders for advice on everything that you have to say, but realize this, according to what one author says that I really like, he says, Christmas, what it reminds us of is it tells us that you do not get to name Jesus, but Jesus actually names you. Jesus is actually the one who is Lord over everything in your life. And perhaps that's why the changes that we are experiencing in our life plans, that's probably why oftentimes it's a lot more painful than it should be. Because oftentimes the painful parts that are changing, those are the parts that we think belongs to us. It's ours. I'm, for example, stressed about certain things in my life with my kids and with our church. And perhaps it's so stressful because I see these things as my things. I see things as something that's really precious to me that I have just clear ideas of what needs to be done for it. But maybe this Christmas season is reminding me that, wait a second, I need to let go a little bit about this and let Jesus have control over what he's doing over these things. Maybe for you, you might not be stressed about church or your kids, but you're stressed about other things that you think belongs to you, that's yours. Whether it be the career trajectory that you have, or it be the dating status that you're going through. But maybe Christmas is meant to sober us and remind us that the things that we are clinging so tightly to, they make for such poor gods, and they've been functioning as gods for a long time. And what we need to do is what we need is saving from these things. And this is why Jesus came. Not to merely let us know God exists so that he can be with us, but so that he can save us from the things that we cling too closely to. And that's why in verse 21 and 23 it says, she will bear a son, you shall call his name Jesus, for he will save his people from their sins, and they shall give his name Emmanuel. So before we move on to our last point, is there anything right now during the season that you've been holding on a little bit too tightly to? Is there anything right now that you are treating as if it's yours and it belongs to you? A good way to know and to diagnose what you consider to be yours are things that you kind of keep close to the vest, things that you don't really let a lot of people speak into. For example, are you the type of person where you let people speak into your dating life? Or is that something that's really close to your vest and you know what you're doing? Or do you let anyone speak into your spending habits? Or is that something you keep close to the vest and you kind of know what you feel like you know what you're doing? or your political views or your lifestyle? Is that something that you keep close to the vest? What is it that you feel like this is something that I know what to do? This is something that you have rights over? Remember, Christmas tells us and reminds us that we don't name Jesus. Jesus names us. And if you have Jesus entering into your life, he must speak into all of life, because that's what it means to be in relationship with Jesus. But last not least, when Jesus enters into your life, not only is it meant to give us courage, not only is it meant to let go of our rights, but when we enter into a relationship with Jesus, what we have is grace to receive God's love. One last thing Christmas tells us is that when you have Jesus in your life, something happens where you receive a type of love that is radically deeper and radically stronger than we can ever imagine with the person. And the way we see this is actually the way the story ends in the story of Joseph. Look what it says in verses 24 to 25. When Joseph woke from his sleep, he did as the angel of the Lord commanded him. He took his wife, but knew her not until she had given birth to a son, and he called his name Jesus. Now, at first glance, you see this sentence, and maybe we don't think much of it. But we have to actually realize how significant this was for Joseph to do this. Because when you think about it, Joseph, when he decided, hey, he woke him from this dream, he goes, okay, I'm going to take Mary as my wife. I'm going to adopt Jesus as my son. I'm going to name him Jesus. What you have to realize is that Joseph, he didn't have to do this. Because Joseph's situation, it was really different than Mary's situation. You see, Mary, when she had Jesus and she was pregnant and the Spirit visited her, she was kind of stuck. And that's next week we're going to talk a little bit more about Mary. But she was kind of in a situation that she couldn't get out of, because she's pregnant. She has a child in her belly, and she can't really escape that situation. Not only that, but people, when they see that she's pregnant, if she doesn't have a husband, that's kind of a shameful thing for a person to go through. And not only that, if no one takes care of her, she's going to be pretty destitute. Because a single mother at this time, that would be actually a very challenging thing in the first century. But Joseph, his situation was actually really different than Mary's. He didn't have to stay with her, and it was up to him on what to do. So if Joseph chose to stay with Mary, it would be completely voluntary, because he wasn't the one that was pregnant. And he could have easily divorced her. It was within his rights to separate with her, especially because it seemed like, you know, she was promiscuous. Not only that, but if Joseph decided to stay with Mary, realize that he had to carry all the burdens that Mary's had to carry as a mother. He'd have to be a father to a child that's not really biologically his, and he has to raise a child with her. And we, as parents, we know how difficult that could be. And not only that, but Joseph, if he chose to stay with Mary, he'd have to bear her shame. Because right now, they've been engaged for however long, for about a few months or so, and they're going to know when the baby comes that something happened. Where did this child come from? And if Joseph left Mary and Mary had this child early, people would whisper in the town about Mary's scandal. They'd say, wow, what happened to this girl? But if Joseph stayed with Mary, you know what's going to happen? The people in the town will whisper about Joseph and Mary. Look what these two guys did. Something scandalous happened. And so for Joseph, if he decides to stay with Mary, it was going to be completely voluntary. It was going to require him carrying her burdens. And it was also going to require him to bear her shame. When you think of Joseph in this context, don't you like Joseph? Doesn't he seem like quite a noble character? Maybe I should have named my son Joseph in light of a story like this. Don't you want someone like a Joseph in your life? But when you really think about it, doesn't Joseph now remind you of someone you know? See, this is the heart of Christmas. The heart of Christmas is Jesus. He came into this world as a child so that he would be to us what Joseph was to Mary. The gospel tells us that we were like Mary, where we were stuck in a situation that we could not help ourselves in. But Jesus voluntarily came down from heaven to earth to rescue us. The gospel tells us that we were like Mary, where we had burdens to carry that were too much for us to handle. But Jesus offers to carry our burdens for us. And the gospel tells us that we were like Mary, where there's things that we have done that's filled with shame. But at the cross, Jesus Christ came and took our shame and made him his own. And Christmas tells us that when Jesus comes into your life, we can receive a type of love like this. And so if you're new to our church, or if you're exploring Christianity, this is what Christmas means to Christians. You don't just have a God who tells you what to do. You don't just have a baby in a manger that looks cute and beautiful. But what we have is a God who calls himself Emmanuel, God with us, where he wants to be in relationship with us, with all the burdens and all the shames that we have. He wants to carry that and identify with us in that way. If you're a member of our church and you're familiar with this, but it's been really challenging for you in this season, would you remember during this upcoming season, you're not alone, but God is with you, bearing the burdens, bearing the shame, and he's shown that through the person of Jesus. And if it's challenging to get through this difficult season, would you remember that God did not just come once through a child as on Christmas Day, but he also promises that one day he will come again. And so as we begin this Advent season as a church, would we remember to have courage in the midst of a season, to have hope in the midst of a season, knowing that even though this is challenging for all of us, one day our Messiah will come again, and we have that guarantee because once before, our Messiah came to us. Let's all pray together.